It's time.
We are not called to be nice.
Sandy Rios. Welcome, Sandy. Thanks for being here.
We are often called to be confrontational.
And here with me in D.C. is Fox News contributor Sandy Rios.
And you still like me or you don't like me, James?
Are you okay? You all right?
I'm a musician. I can't help it.
Longtime Fox News contributor Sandy Rios, thanks very much for being with us.
We have, I think it's 4-1 youth in America wants gay marriage.
Our kids are the product of public schools. No wonder they poll the way they do.
It's time to stand up or we're going to lose everything we have.
Director of Governmental Affairs for the American Family Association.
Step up, speak up, say something, do something.
This isn't a game. This is real life.
Sandy Rios is with the American Family Association.
A pro-life radio talk show host.
Some things are worth fighting for.
So proudly we hailed at the twilight's last gleaming, whose broad stripes and bright stars through the perilous fight, o'er the ramparts we watched were so gallantly.
At the best part of the Super Bowl last night, Gladys Knight singing the national anthem. You know, Gladys came under a fire for singing at the national anthem, and she had a great statement in response to that. She said, "I understand that Mr. Kaepernick is protesting two things, and they are police violence and injustice. It's unfortunate that our national anthem has been dragged into this debate when the distinctive senses of the national anthem and fighting for justice should each stand alone. I'm here today on Sunday, February 3rd, to give the anthem back its voice, to stand for that historic choice of words, the way it unites us when we hear it, and to free it from the same prejudices and struggles I have fought long and hard for all my life, from walking back hallways, from marching with our social leaders, from using my voice for good. I've been in the forefront of this battle longer than most of those voicing their opinions to win the right to sing our country's anthem on a stage as large as Super Bowl 53, no matter who chooses to deflect with this narrative and continue to mix these two in the same message, it is not so and cannot be made so by anyone speaking it. I pray this national anthem will bring us all together in a way never before witnessed, and we can move forward and untangle these truths which mean so much to all of us. Go Gladys Knight. I mean, it was a classy, classy performance, and it made me, you couldn't help but compare it to the halftime performance with Adam Levine of Maroon 5, whose voice I absolutely love, and I love their music. But oh my goodness, I know the answer to this, but rhetorically I ask, when did music become so vulgar and foul? When did singers start thinking that they had to take off their clothes or expose their body parts in various ways that, or use language that is just vulgar. When did they decide they had to do that? I remember, I think Lady Madonna was a turning point. Lady Gaga took it 10 steps further. And then, of course, rap degraded it even further. So we had certainly a dose of that. Why does Adam Levine think he has to? It's just too overtly sexual and unnecessary. And I don't like that. But let me say that last night's game, I had, of course, the Patriots defeated the Rams 13-3. And I'm not going to talk to you about football talk because you know how that goes. I'm not enough of a connoisseur to make any kind of sense. I don't even know the vocabulary. But I did think it was really cool. This observation that was made about the quarterbacks that, I got to find it here. That Kevin, the quarterback for New England, of course, the quarterback for the Rams, Goff, was only 7 years old when Brady started his history-making run. Goff doesn't recall anything about the first time Brady hoisted the Lombardi Trophy. In fact, his first Super Bowl memory didn't come until 2 years later when the Patriots beat the Carolina Panthers. At 24 years and 112 days old, Goff was the fourth youngest quarterback to start a Super Bowl game and the first millennial. Brady is actually fifth on that list at 24 years, 184 days. 17-year gap was the largest between starting quarterbacks in Super Bowl history. I just thought that was kind of cool. One more thing about the Super Bowl last night, just some faith things that I always enjoy and picks up my ears. Rams superstar Todd Gurley did an interview on Sports Spectrum, and he talked about how much God means to him. They said it's the first time he's spoken out about his faith. He said, "He means everything to me. God, to me, is everything. Without him, none of this is possible. Faith, family, and football." And that same theme was echoed by Sony Michel, who is a Georgia running back who is now with the New England Patriots. He said, "God has blessed me. That's why I'm here, because he's blessed me so much my whole life." So some great testimonies to faith. I actually think Gladys Knight is a Christian too. That didn't come into get into print, but I think she is too, which explains her graciousness. But she gives you a glimpse into what is still there in America, the good things that are still there, God making his presence known and people of faith making their mark, whether it's on the field or on the stage. Well, all right, so we have a lot more to talk about, so here we go. The president did an interview before the Super Bowl, and he said a lot of different things. He was on State of the Union, but I thought you might... No, he's on CBS. Of course, CBS broadcast the game. He had some comments about the border situation. You know that he sent troops to the border, I think 4,000 different troops just in the last 24 hours down on the border because the crisis is just still there with people flooding over, at least trying to flood over, trying to come across. And so this is just a portion of what he said last night. Let's listen.
You had quite the showdown with Speaker Pelosi. What did you learn about negotiating with her?
Well, I think that she was very rigid, which I would expect, but I think she is very bad for our country. She knows that you need a barrier. She knows that we need border security. She wanted to win a political point. I happen to think it's very bad politics because basically she wants open borders. She doesn't mind human trafficking, or she wouldn't do this because, you know,
she offered you over $1 billion for border security.
Excuse me?
She offered over $1 billion for border security. She doesn't want the wall.
She's costing the country hundreds of billions of dollars because what's happening is when you have a porous border and when you have drugs pouring in and when you have people dying all over the country because of people like Nancy Pelosi who don't want to give proper border security for political reasons, she's doing a terrible disservice to our country. And on the 15th, we have now set the table beautifully because everybody knows what's going on because of the shutdown. People that didn't have any idea, they didn't have a clue as to what was happening, they now know exactly what's happening. They see human trafficking. They see drugs and gangs and criminals pouring in. Now, we catch them because we're doing a great job. But if we had proper border security, we wouldn't have to work so hard, and we could do an even better job. And I think Nancy Pelosi is doing a terrible disservice to the people of our country. But
you're still going to have to deal with her,
no,
though.
No, she can keep playing her games, but we will win because we have a much better issue. On a political basis, what she's doing is, I actually think it's bad politics, mm-hmm. but much more importantly, it's very bad for our country.
I love the way he distinguishes that, and he's absolutely true. So much of what you hear conversations on television, even on Fox, forever on Fox. I used to be part of the Fox family, and I'm grateful for them, let me just say. But it's always political. It's always political. They cannot. It seems that very few can actually see or make the point that this is about Americans. This is about our safety, whether it's the border or anything else. They're always talking about the political gangs, the games, the political calculations. And it's not always about that. It often is in Washington, but it has repercussions for real life. It happens to be that the president's policies, for the most part, are the policies of the American people. It's the reason he was elected. He represents the views of the American people. He said he represented them. We expect him to do what he said he was going to do. That's why he won. And so when he says politically, he thinks Nancy Pelosi is making a bad choice, but he's also saying before the country, it's a tragic choice. And I think he's absolutely spot on. Who could say otherwise? This is why I keep saying when they try to reduce this to Trump's wall, it's not Trump's wall. It's a wall to protect Americans. It's a wall to protect you and your children. It's to keep the drugs out. It's to keep the diseases out. It's to control the immigration coming into this country in a meaningful way. There are a lot of other reasons, but we need a wall. There's no question about it. And most rational people, I guess, probably I'd like to say every rational person that I know of understands that. It's the Democrats on the left that are out of their minds and make comments like it's a 14th century solution. A wall is really? It's just the silliest kinds of conversation. Again, I say, then why not just open your front door and put a camera on it, and you can see who's coming in. As long as you can see, that's really the deterrent, right? Doesn't really matter if you have a door. That's kind of a 14th century deterrent, don't you think? It really is the very same thing. All right, I want to talk. I may not get to talk about this as much as I'd like today, but Governor Ralph Northam, we thought he was going to resign yesterday, but it doesn't sound like it. In a press conference, just, I believe this was Saturday, this is clip 7, the governor of Virginia, who is a pediatric neurosurgeon, who told us about how carefully they would deliver a baby that was going to be aborted and have a little conversation, make the baby comfortable before they actually killed it, which is what they would do, or starve it. I'm not sure. He didn't explain that part. And so this is Northam in a press conference defending himself, clip 7.
Before I take questions, I want to take this opportunity to apologize to the many people who have been hurt by this episode and mistakes that I have made in the past. I am ready to earn your forgiveness, and I am ready to begin today. Thank you, and I look forward to your questions. Yes, sir.
It's crystal clear. You're saying that you had no idea this racist photo existed before it surfaced less than 24 hours ago.
The photo in the EVMS yearbook.
Yes.
That's correct. I was in the United States Army while I was in medical school. I knew where I was going upon graduation from medical school. I was doing rotations out of the state. I had nothing to do with the preparation of the yearbook, nor did I buy one. And so this was the first time. Yesterday evening was the first time I saw this photo. It was shocking, and it was horrific.
How do you account for one of your nicknames that's listed in the BMI yearbook in 1981, Coonman? What's your explanation for that?
My main nickname in high school and in college.
All right, I'm interrupted because blah, 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 blah. You know, why they call you Coonman? I don't know why they did that. Of course, there are two issues here. There's the blackface photo and the Ku Klux Klansman standing next together and hit the page that is his in his medical school. I think it's the medical school yearbook. And of course, he doesn't know what. He's shocked and appalled. He knew nothing about that. Let me just tell you that Ralph Northam got nearly $2 million in donations from Planned Parenthood for his reelection campaign. Also, his lieutenant governor, Fairfax, which we're not going to get, I don't think, have a chance to get into today, is, it sounds to me on paper, at least in reading, he is more rabidly pro-abortion all 9 months. Infanticide is great than Ralph Northam, if you can believe that. So we have to think twice about whether we actually want Northam to step aside. There's going to be a March for Life, Commonwealth for Life. That's going to be February the 7th. That's coming right up. It's this week. It's going to be at the Virginia State Capitol at 10 a.m. And so for those of you nearby or that want to drive across the country, many of you have asked me what you can do. That's something you could do. Show up by the thousands in Richmond to let people know how you feel about this. Coming up next, another issue. Our guest will be J. Christian Adams. You'll want to hear this. Sandy Rios in the morning on AFR Talk.
Question: do you have a health insurance plan you are not happy with? Well, Bethany and Jason thought they were stuck. Their plan just kept getting more expensive, and Bethany's favorite doctor didn't even take that plan anymore. And then some friends at church told them about MediShare.
With our previous insurance, we were paying $1,200 a month. With MediShare, we now pay around $600 a month.
Yes, they're paying $600 less per month, and that's a pretty typical savings with MediShare. And they actually like MediShare more.
I was able to go back to my original doctor that I absolutely loved, and it's just been an absolutely beautiful thing being a part of MediShare.
Yeah, so they pay a lot less, and they like it more. No wonder MediShare is growing so fast. Find out more. They're super easy to talk to. All you have to do is call 833-44-BIBLE. That's 833-44-B-I-B-L-E, 833-44-BIBLE.
Hi, this is Steve Tiber with 8 Days of Hope. We've seen God open up so many doors for us to help serve and love those who get affected by a natural disaster.
As the trees and the wind started crashing down around us, my wife was, of course, very diligently praying, you know, Lord, please be with us.
Very simply, we do it because God commands us to love others.
I see these volunteers all as a gift from God.
And I'm just grateful they're here, you know, helping out. It's a blessing.
If you're interested in becoming a part of what God's doing through 8 Days of Hope, please go to 8daysofhope.com, click on Get Involved, submit your email address.
I've noticed that whenever there's a time in my life when things might be a little gloomy, the number one thing that I can do is to go serve somebody.
And I would encourage anyone else to, it's worth it. Come out and do it next time if you didn't make it to this one. And the Father will really bless you in it.
Thank you so much for your prayers and volunteering with 8 Days of Hope.
Hello, Americans. I'm Todd Starnes with news and commentary next.
Truett McConnell University.
Hey, my name is Aaron Abbs. I am an undecided major, and I'm a freshman here at TME. And as soon as I came here, I fell in love with the campus. Like, I knew, like, God was calling me to be here at TME. And, you know, I couldn't get a better education than this. Like, professors who pray before class, who care about your spiritual walk with Christ. You are who you are, and they care about you.
Are you called? Visit truett.edu today.
During a presidential debate in October of 2016, President Trump explained the Democrats' position on late-term abortions. His words turned out to be prophetic.
If you go with what Hillary is saying, in the ninth month, you can take the baby and rip the baby out of the womb of the mother just prior to the birth of the baby. Now, you can say that that's okay, and Hillary can say that that's okay, but it's not okay with me. Because based on what she's saying and based on where she's going and where she's been, you can take the baby and rip the baby out of the womb in the ninth month on the final day. And that's not acceptable.
President Trump warned us the Democrats were coming after the unborn. And as we have seen in New York and Virginia, he was absolutely right. Be sure to check out ToddStearns.com for more conservative news and commentary.
Don't forget to connect with Sandy Rios in the Morning on Facebook or email Sandy at sandy@afr.net. That's sandy@afr.net. Sandy Rios in the Morning on American Family Radio.
I'm Kathy Tran. I represent the 42nd House District. And simply put, I trust women to make decisions about their health care and their bodies. And today I stand proudly with Governor Northam, Lieutenant Governor Fairfax, Senator McClellan, and so many of my colleagues in the House and Senate, NARAL Pro-Choice Virginia, Planned Parenthood Advocates of Virginia, and Whole Women's Health, and many others, to make sure we continue to fight that women have the freedom and dignity to make their healthcare decisions without any interference from politicians. I introduced House Bill 2491, the repeal law, to lift medically unnecessary and unduly burdensome requirements for women to access abortions in the Commonwealth. This bill removes hospital requirements on clinics and providers, laws that mandate informed consent, a combination of mandatory ultrasounds, biased literature, and the 24-hour waiting period, and additional doctor requirements for late-term abortions.
I just wanted to thank the governor and his team. They have signed on to prioritize the two bills that we talked about today, the Repeal Act and the Reproductive Freedom Act, that is part of the governor's priority legislation.
So we have a lot of work to do, and as you know, I do support the repeal bill. We need to get rid of these
onerous pieces of legislation. And we also need to make sure that we put in our code that women are the ones that should be having the choice to make regarding their reproductive health care.
As abortion providers, we believe that everybody deserves dignity, deserves respect, and that our patients should be at the center of their own health care decisions. That's why we fight harmful anti-abortion laws, and that's why we support legislation like this. Virginia could and should do better. Passing the Repeal Act is the first step, and we are proud to be here with our allies to support this act today.
That was a press conference held by Democratic leaders in Virginia on Thursday. That was Ralph Northam, Kathy Tran, the one that introduced the bill that really wanted to get away with any restrictions on late-term abortions, even as late as the day of the birth, the day the baby was due, allowing them to kill the baby even after it was born. That's the thing that started all this off. The Lieutenant Governor Justin Fairfax that I mentioned a few minutes ago, Attorney General Mark Herring, and it was an abortion clinic, Whole Women's Health. She starts out by saying, "We provide fabulous abortion care." And then they want to do away with all restrictions on abortions. They call it, of course, the women's right, and women should rule over their bodies. We've heard it, yada, 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 haven't we? And so people are beginning to get shocked and appalled at hearing exactly what it is that they want. Governor Ralph Northam, of course, is under attack, not for this, not for his interview where he said that babies would be made comfortable after they were born while they discussed what to do with them, exactly maybe how to dispose of them. I'm not sure. But people were appalled by that. But what's taken front and center is his appearance, the appearance on his yearbook of him, maybe, in blackface or someone, and someone else in a KKK costume. This is just one thing. J. Christian Adams just wrote an article about this. So before we get into our next topic, Christian, I would love your response to this. Christian is with PJ Media. He also is the founder of Public Interest Law Foundation. Christian's main interest is voting rights, and we're going to get into that, voting integrity, but he writes about a lot of things, including this. Good morning, Christian. Thanks for joining us.
Good morning, Sandy.
Yeah, so your latest article in PJ Media was entitled "Defending Virginia Governor Ralph KKK Northam, Defending Him." Okay, so tell us what it is you were trying to say in that article.
Well, everything up is down, everything out is in. It's an upside down world now because things that we never thought possible, 30 years ago are happening. It's not a big deal, apparently, when you say things like you just heard on that tape and have a radical position on the life issue. But by golly, put on blackface and you'll have all kinds of defenders. As I write in the article, three cheers for reproductive justice is such an intoxicating theology for Democrats that it may even absolve blackface and KKK garb.
Yeah, I know that was the point that if you had not made that point, I was going to make it for you, because that's the thing that struck me about what you wrote here, Christian. And what you're saying, of course, is he might be forgiven.
Being forgiven. I mean, both U.S. Senators, Mark Warner and Tim Kaine, have already said he shouldn't resign. He's not being pressured, by many in Virginia. It's mostly outsiders. So I think he's going to stay on, but that's all because they know that he adheres to the theology of extreme positions on life. That's why he's going to survive, is because it's a crusade. It's more than a crusade. Like I said in the article, it's a theology to them. As long as you adhere to the orthodoxy of radicalism on that issue, you can survive apparently anything.
No, it's actually true, Christian, and people probably don't realize how it's like the environmentalist movement is a religion, and the abortion industry and the women who so rabidly support it, it really is religion-like. And you're right, nothing else matters if you have the particular stand on that. I would really like for you to just address for a second, you mentioned a couple of other Republicans who were alleged as racists, and there's a long list. But you mentioned Trent Lott, and I did just think we should review that. Trent Lott had to step down as leader of the Senate, majority leader of the Senate. Why? What happened?
There was a 100-year-old birthday party, 100 years old, Strom Thurmond. By that time, he was essentially didn't walk real well, And he turned 100 years old, and Trent Law went to the birthday party for this very old man, and he just simply praised him. He said nice things about him. He said that, you know, he's been a great senator, and, you know, he ran for president, and he made a quip that, you know, the country would probably be a lot better off if we voted for him, or if he had won. Well, that did it. That was the end of Trent Lott, right? Lott never mentioned race. Strom sat there smiling like a 100-year-old man on his birthday would do, and the wolves came out for Lott, and he was gone, all because he said something nice that inferred that if Strom Thurmond won president, that the country would be better off. And we can debate the ups and downs of that, whether it's right or wrong, but by golly, I mean, this was nothing but graciousness on a man's birthday, and that was enough to offend the race PC police who drove him out of office.
All right, and so then, and of course, there is a long list, Christian, I know, but you chose particular ones here. In fact, I do think we need to at least mention Florida's, I don't think this is a story that got much traction, and you mentioned Florida Secretary of State Mike Ertl. I don't know that story.
Right, Mike was, he was a Seminole County election supervisor. Governor DeSantis picked him to be the new Secretary of State a couple weeks ago, and then a photo emerged of Mike in blackface at a party in about 2005, dressed up like a Katrina survivor. And like I said in the article, Mike Ertl was gone before the cock crowed. I mean, it was just, you are gone, you are resigning. It wasn't a close call. You know, but that's how Republicans are treated on issues of race. And Democrats, obviously, we've seen this weekend with the governor of Virginia, is treated very differently because he adheres to leftist ideology, and that absolves his sins on race.
Okay, then we have to talk about, I have spent precious little time talking about judicial nominees, and Tom Farr was an appointee by the president, and he has been, I don't know what his situation is now, if he's been finally tanked, but what's the story with him in regard to race, Christian?
Right, Tom Farr is a distinguished lawyer in Raleigh, North Carolina. He was picked by the president to be a judge on the federal bench, and he was essentially submarined by Tim Scott, Republican of South Carolina. Everybody listening should call Tim Scott's office today and tell him, let Tom Farr be confirmed. Confirm Tom Farr. Tim Scott, a Republican, teamed up with a bunch of radical Democrat lefty lawyers to sabotage Farr over false witness. That's the amazing thing. They said that he had a bad record with the Jesse Helms campaign, but there's a Justice Department memo that clearly says he didn't have anything to do with it. Now, the details are a little complicated. You can read all about it at PJ Media, but Tom Farr didn't have anything to do with what they were accusing him of. It's classic false witness. And Farr got sabotaged, thanks to Tim Scott in South Carolina, because of this racial issue that he didn't have anything to do with. That's how bad it gets. When Republicans don't do anything, they suffer because Tim Scott voted against Tom Farr, which he needs to change that position. And so please call Tim Scott's office today. And on the other hand, here's Ralph Northam, who's dressed up like a Klansman, and nothing happens.
Yeah, it's just, it really is. It really is unbelievable. But of course, Christian, that's kind of in some way, in some part, in a large part, because of the press. The press just won't come after people with the right thinking. Ralph Northam is poster boy for what they want, and so they won't come after him and hound him into obscurity, but they will the others. And it's just distressing that Tim Scott, who's a Republican who should know better, especially when the allegations are false, should join this bandwagon to destroy a good man who's been appointed to the bench. But Tom Farr, is he out yet or no?
Well, the question is whether he'll be reappointed, and he should be reappointed, but it all depends on what Tim Scott does. If Tim Scott says he's going to continue to oppose him under these false pretenses, then he probably won't be reappointed. And Tim Scott knows that. He's now doing the bidding of Cory Booker and Kamala Harris in blocking Tom Farr. It really has to end. South Carolinians support the president's judicial nominees. That's why they elected him. And, you know, Tim Scott certainly should not be buying into this false racial narrative that he has about Tom Farr.
He's actually been very defensive about it. Conservatives have approached him. It's just a mystery, Christian, and very disappointing. But people in South Carolina need to know that, because they need to know that. We need good senators that we can trust. And Tim Scott has not been very trustworthy lately. But all right, so Christian, last week you had a very busy week, and I need to say that the House Judiciary Committee, which is a very powerful committee, is now in the hands of the Democrats. They had their inaugural hearing of the 116th Congress, which is the democratically run Congress, chaired by Nancy Pelosi, not chaired, but she's the Speaker of the House now. Jared Nadler is the chairman of this committee now. And the first thing they chose to talk about was the For the People Act. For the People Act. And this is the way it's described in, I believe, the New York Times. The For the People Act, which Democratic representatives have trumpeted as their signature legislative priority. The bill would turn the drawing of congressional boundaries over to nonpartisan commissions, promote more transparency in campaign contributions, and expand the public financing system for House and presidential candidates. It's for the people, Christian. Let me just say that Christian testified along with our good friend Hans von Spakovsky, and there's more to say about that, but let's just stop right now and let you respond to that.
Right. Folks need to understand this is the number one priority of Democrats, the number one priority, and it will essentially federalize state elections. Under the Constitution, states have the power to run their own elections, set the terms of qualifications, and so forth. The Democrats don't like that because it results in each state picking how they want to do it. And, you know, the reason that states get to run their own elections is because it promotes freedom. It promotes individual liberty to have decentralized control. No single actor, no single bad person can take control of elections because it's decentralized. The country was formed from the states up, and that didn't change in the Civil War. That those parts of the Constitution were left untouched. And what the Democrats are trying to do is take over everything, everything. When the elections occur, early voting, same-day registration, how you draw your district lines, felons must be allowed to vote under all circumstances. I mean, I could go on and on. No voter ID, independent redistricting commissions that are always stacked by Democrats, of course. They basically want to take everything over, and it's the number one priority of the Democratic Party in Congress.
You know, Christian, a mutual friend of ours put it this way. Tom Fitton said that it's legalizing voter fraud. Do you think that's an overstatement?
Well, I don't ever want to say Tom overstates anything, but what it does is this. It sets up a circumstance where bad actors will exploit these new vulnerabilities which are put into the system. It creates a circumstance where states are no longer able to police their elections effectively against voter fraud. Look, here's an example. Right now under federal law, if somebody has moved away or died, the way states figure that out on the voter rolls is they watch who's voting. And if you don't vote after a while, they send a notice and says, hey, are you still out there? And if you don't respond to it and two federal elections go by, under federal law, you're allowed to remove them from the voter rolls. They want to get rid of that cleaning mechanism and ban it. They don't want states to do it. It's already, you know, states are allowed to do it under federal law, but they want to ban it. All sorts of little things like that that will crank in vulnerabilities, enhancing mail ballots, automatic voter registration, so everyone has to be registered to vote. I mean, it's just full of corruption that will be enabled by passage.
Interestingly enough, it was you and Hans von Spakovsky of Heritage Foundation. And Christian, I should have given you a better introduction. Christian was with the Justice Department. He was a whistleblower during the Black Panther scandal, New Black Panthers, where they intimidated voters in Philadelphia. Christian worked on the civil rights part of the Justice Department and left blowing the whistle that Eric Holder and his Justice Department had stopped investigating this when they already had the evidence that these guys were guilty of voter intimidation. And that's probably, I'm guessing, your baptism of fire into this voter mess. We're going to take a break. And when we come back, I want you to hear Matt Gaetz, because he was on the Judiciary Committee. He actually put the wood to one of the leftist members of the panel that we can talk about in just a second. But I want you to hear a little bit of that exchange, and then we'll go back and talk about this bill a little bit more and maybe let Christian describe for us what that hearing was like. This is Sandy Rios in the morning on AFR Talk.
All who hate wisdom love death. My name is Abraham Hamilton III, and this is the Hamilton Minute. On the 46th anniversary of the diabolical Roe v. Wade decision, the New York Senate passed the Reproductive Health Act, which allows late-term abortions when the baby is up to 24 weeks, or there's an absence of fetal viability, or the abortion is necessary to protect the mother's life or health. The life or health, all factors exception to the law, permits abortion at any point during the pregnancy if the mother says the baby would negatively affect her emotionally, psychologically, familially, or if it negatively affects her age. To celebrate death is to reject wisdom. Baby murder proponents are the new Nazis.
Listen each weekday from 5 to 6 p.m. Central for the Hamilton Corner with Abraham Hamilton III, public policy analyst for the American Family Association.
Hi, this is Dan Celia from Financial Issues. We as God's people need to be good stewards of all that He has given us. That is so important, and that's what drives me each day as I break down the latest financial numbers and talk to listeners across the country about their use of the money that God has entrusted to them. Join me each morning from 8 to 10 Central and Saturday mornings at 10 o'clock Central Time for Financial Issues right here on American Family Radio.
This generation is different. Everything is smartphoney. Everything is appy. You know, it's all about the quick access to information and short attention spans and all the rest. But it seems to me that another way that we can have a very big impact on our culture is to outthink the culture. You cannot be a good thinker as a Christian. And is this not a command of God that we are to love the Lord with all of our mind and not just our heart, soul, and strength? Join me for Janet Mefford Live, weekdays at noon Central on American Family Radio.
Brian Fisher here with today's Life and Liberty Minute. The problem with America is not with our economy, it's with our families. In too many communities, too many children are born out of wedlock. The rate is now over 40% in America and headed for a life of instability and poverty. Marriage is the fundamental solution to poverty. Studies have shown that if men and women finish their high school education, get a job, and then get married and have children, they and their children have a single-digit chance of winding up in poverty. Saving sex for marriage and remaining faithful to the marriage covenant will enable their children to grow up in stable, happy, and secure two-parent families. One of the reasons I wrote the Boy to Man book is to give practical help to fathers of 12-year-old boys on their glide path to true manhood. Order a copy today from afastore.net. That's afastore.net.
Catch Brian Fisher on Focal Point, weekday afternoons at 105 Central on American Family Radio.
This is Frank Gaffney with the Secure Freedom Minute. Proponents of open borders in Washington often profess that they favor increased border security, just not the sort of physical barriers Donald Trump has famously branded as the wall. They claim walls don't work. Really? Ask the Israelis, who have essentially ended the threat of domestic terrorism by building an effective multi-layer separation fence that keeps out jihadist Palestinians. Or ask former President Barack Obama, who, as Representative Louis Gohmert recently pointed out, has just built a 10-foot wall around his new mansion. The fact is that properly constructed walls, located where appropriate, augmented by surveillance technology and backed by competent personnel, do work. They turn easy and inviting targets into very hard ones for attackers, drug and human traffickers, and others we can't afford to have come here. Thank you, President Trump, for insisting America must have the wall, too. This is Frank Gaffney.
Sandy Rios in the morning on American Family Radio.
Sandy Rios back with you. We are today beginning our, we always work with India Partners. Once a year we talk to you about this. If you don't remember it, India Partners works with boys and girls as young as 8 o'clock. At 8 o'clock. Oh boy. As young as 8, who are being trafficked and sold into red light areas of Mumbai, India. Many of these little girls, you know, actually become moms at this young age. India Partners operates safe houses away from the red light districts of Mumbai where children of trafficked women can escape the brothel areas and be relocated. $7.08 provides one day of safety, rescue, and care for a child escaping the red light areas of Mumbai. So, and that $7.08 includes full room and board, full-time Christian school, private tutoring, medical attention, counseling, and sharing the love of Jesus very clearly with these kids. If you would like to help, all you have to do is call 877-616-2396. That's 877-616-2396. Or go to AFR.net, AFR.net, and make your most generous donation to India Partners. J. Christian Adams is my guest today. And Christian was in a hearing last week, the first hearing of the Judiciary Committee of this particular Congress. Matt Gaetz was on the Judiciary Committee. Before Christian has a chance to respond, I want you to hear how Matt Gaetz interacted with one of the leftists on the panel. I'll give you her name in just a second, but let's listen.
So I'm looking at Anthony Bruton. Anthony Bruton committed sex acts with a 12-year-old at knife point. Then he threatened to cut her throat and bury her. He spent 5 years in prison for that offense. And so then, like, if Anthony Bruton under H.R. 1 were to move out of Florida and would have moved to the state of Missouri, where they had on the ballot a ballot question that dealt with whether or not your past criminal conduct in violent sexual acts would be considered in sentencing, would H.R. 1 have allowed Mr. Bruton to rape a 12-year-old at knife point, move to another state, and then vote against actions that would allow that to be considered at a subsequent sentencing?
Sir, our criminal justice system needs to hold people accountable for the crimes that they commit. What H.R. 1 does is uphold voting as a national symbol of equality and full citizenship. It would restore the right to vote to people who have completed their sentence and served out their debt per the criminal justice system.
Yeah, I get that. I just want to make the point that it's like everybody. In the state of Florida, we passed a ballot proposition that created a path for nonviolent felons to be able to participate in the process again. But what this does is this bill would allow someone like Nardo Harmon, who broke into the homes of people and raped 11-year-old victims. So he gets out of his house, breaks into somebody else's house, and rapes an 11-year-old. But if H.R. 1 were the law and Nardo Harmon did that, he would then be able to go vote against California Proposition 83 that would have required him to wear a GPS monitoring device. So I think that, like, there are some things you can do that are so bad. The degradation of people's right to vote, intimidating people from vote, raping children, that probably renders your right to participate in those decisions in the future. I appreciate the chairman's indulgence, and I yield back.
It was Congressman Matt Gaetz from Florida in that hearing about what's called the People for the People Act. They always give such great names. It's actually H.R. 1. Vanita Gupta, that was the other voice you heard. She's the president and chief executive of the Leadership Conference on Civil and Human Rights. And also at that table was Hans von Spakovsky of Heritage and also J. Christian Adams of the Public Interest Legal Foundation. Christian, describe that that room. I know that this you guys were the only two to really be opposing H.R. 1, as I understand. Can you describe that hearing? Just give us a bird's eye view of what that was like.
Remember, this is a top priority of Democrats. So every single Democrat member was there. Every single Democrat staffer was lining the walls. There were no seats. They were standing along the edges. The room was packed. I think Chairman Nadler talked about how it was the biggest crowd they've ever had for a hearing. Republicans mostly showed up. They came and went, but at least they showed up. And you just heard tape of Matt Gaetz from Florida. He really, really showed how to light into the Democrats and show how their policies hurt people. He talked about criminals, and you didn't run the tape on the earlier one where he talked about voter fraudsters. He's like, will they be automatically restored with the right to vote, people who committed voter fraud? Answer was yes. And he talked about how these particular criminals, by name, what incredible research he did, would be allowed to vote on particular state referendums that affected their crimes. There were real votes, and every single time the NAACP and the Lawyers Committee person, Vanita Gupta, said, oh, yeah, they'd be allowed to vote. And Sandy, real quick, Ralph Northam is being run out of office because of the KKK and blackface pictures. Under this bill, murderers would be allowed to be the governor of Virginia, murderers, because they would be eligible voters under H.R. 1.
Christian, this whole business of voter fraud, I don't even know if that's the broadest word to call it, but voter chicanery, very dangerous voter chicanery, has been an issue for you for a long time. But I want to read to you how the New York Times characterized you and Hans. It says, Republicans chose to direct most of their questions toward Hans von Spakovsky of the Heritage Foundation and J. Christian Adams of Public Interest Legal Foundation, both members of the Trump administration's commission to investigate voter fraud. which disbanded without any real evidence of corruption. I'd like your comments on that.
I love it. So here's what happens. President Trump appoints a commission to investigate voter fraud. He picks me. He picks Hans. We get on, and immediately the lawsuits start. And so 12 different lawsuits by leftist groups, yes, they were Soros-funded, some of them, and they sued us to break us up, to dismantle us, to basically cause chaos. They succeed before we can get the job done, and then it shows up in the New York Times a year later that no evidence was produced. Well, that's because it was a self-fulfilling prophecy by the people who oppose the commission. So that's just how these people play, is they create their own myth and oral tradition, but they largely they're the ones responsible for doing it. They're the reason the thing disbanded.
Christian, I want to just, because I remember this, I remember that they put so many restrictions, and I don't know if it was in court injunctions or what, that you guys could not even communicate with each other. Chris Kobach was another member of the panel. You guys were just completely hamstrung so that you could not proceed. And also the secretaries of state and the various states would not cooperate with turning over information that you needed to do your research. Isn't that part of it also?
Right, and even worse, we had people on the commission, like Maine Secretary of State Matt Dunlap, who was opposed to the commission's work. I mean, there was enemies inside the wire, so it was a mess. And then for the New York Times to say something like that just shows you why, in fact, they are fake news. You know, notwithstanding the Super Bowl commercial last night about the Washington Post, the New York Times is fake news.
Yeah, and so is the Washington Post. You know, Christian, you have spent a lot of your time in the Public Interest Legal Foundation just kind of trying to discover who's voting and who isn't. And our friend Daniel Horowitz just did an article last week where, well, he's reporting on what Texas is reporting, that at least 95,000 registered voters are suspected of having registered to vote as non-citizens. What have you found out about that? What can we quantify about non-citizen voting in the United States?
Well, it is happening, and the other thing we know, the first we know it is happening. Number two is that there's a whole bunch of groups out there that exist to put up smoke screens and chafe and other diversionary efforts to keep people away from understanding that this is happening. It's because they benefit from it. Their policies, their politicians benefit from non-citizen voting. And so it makes it hard to get at the data. The Texas case you just referred to, they immediately sprung into action, and they sued Texas for even talking about this, for even beginning the process of getting to the bottom of the alien voting in Texas. They filed a federal court case last week against Texas to stop it. So folks need to understand there's a industry out there that is dedicated to preventing groups like mine, the Public Interest Legal Foundation, from getting to the truth of vulnerabilities in the election system. These groups will sue you, they will lie about you, they will lie about the governor of Texas. They will do all they can to prevent people from ever understanding there is a voter fraud problem and getting to the bottom of the numbers.
You know, it was really interesting, I think, and I'm sure you found it interesting as well, that at the toward the close of the Obama administration, they started talking about how they laughed about voter fraud. Oh, there's no voter fraud. There's not a single incidence of voter fraud has been documented. Something outrageous, as outrageous as that. And it wasn't just Obama that said it. It was a whole mantra of people. What was the purpose, the timing on that, as you look back on that?
Well, look, it has two purposes. One is to obscure the media from what's going on. In other words, mildly sensible reporters will buy the there's no voter fraud myth. But the other thing it does, and this is the more sinister one, is it becomes a Jim Crow story. In other words, if you talk about voter fraud, you're trying to prevent minorities from voting. That's a explicit view that I encountered at the hearing last week, where we were lectured by various people on the Democrat side of the aisle that we shouldn't even be talking about this, because it scares minorities from voting, and so they think it's part of a plot. You know, if you talk about voter fraud, you're Jim Crow, you're Bull Connor, you're trying to prevent people from voting, which, you know what, if you talk about the truth, and that's what it is, because there's voter fraud. Bernice Garza was just arrested last week a woman whose deposition I took in a lawsuit in Stark County, Texas. She was arrested last week for voting, impersonating a dead voter who was still on the voter rolls in Stark County, Texas. This is a woman who used to work for the district attorney's office, and she was arrested for voter fraud. So it does happen.
Yeah, but they would say, but that's just one person. Come on. It's just one person. It's maybe a handful, but it's not significant. Do you think it's significant?
My first thing I say is, how much is okay? Are we okay with, you know, the Virginia House of Representatives was decided by a coin flip, the control of the entire body because of a tie race for the deciding seat. So how much are we okay with? Are we okay with one unit, 20 units? You tell us first what you're okay with, and then I'll get back to you whether we can satisfy that amount.
You know, there is a letter that was signed by, I signed this letter actually, a conservative group that sent a letter about H.R. 1, and they list a whole bunch of things here that I think are things that people could understand, Christian. H.R. 1 would force states to implement mandatory voter registration. What does that mean, mandatory voter registration?
What it means is they take all the government lists. Are you on welfare? Are you on food stamps? Do you get child support? Daycare, do you, in other words, any nexus with the government, and they pick you up off that list and drop you over on the voter rolls. That's what automatic, we call it mandatory voter registration is. Now, if you're basically off the grid, then you're not going to be sucked into this. It's for people who have a lot of government contact, and they would become automatically registered. And they think it's a big deal, because after all, registration's so hard, isn't it, Sandy? I said in my testimony that it's almost harder to avoid registering to vote than it is to register to vote, because you get it at DMV, at the grocery store, they knock on your door. If you go to Lollapalooza, everywhere there's voter registration drives. So it's very difficult to not be registered to vote. It's never been easier in this country to register and vote as it is in America in 2019.
Yeah, and of course, the Motor Voter Act that started, I remember my home state of Illinois with Senator Barack Obama pushing it. He was a big advocate of this, and we know now why, because it was a way to register people to vote that aren't necessarily citizens. It's just an automatic way, and it makes the voter rolls filled with people who should not be voting. Christian, that's a big part of what you've done with Public Interest Legal Foundation, isn't it, is check the voter rolls and done comparisons. Tell us a bit about that.
Right. I mean, all over the country we're doing this. We're focused on important places, for example, Florida, where there are so many people on the voter rolls who are also registered in other states and are voting in other states besides Florida. We look at the duplications, the people who are registered in multiple counties, people who have birth dates that are implausible, people who, you can generally tell the places where criminal voter fraud activity occurs. That's why we were in the Rio Grande Valley, where it's pervasive. You have these politicaras that go around and harvest ballots from people in the Rio Grande. So it's all over the country, and we're trying to fight it.
Yeah, let me just say that Christian makes it sound easy, but it isn't, because he and Hans are like two men standing alone. And Chris Kobach is, I'm sure, standing with them too, but they're really the two that are fighting it the hardest. And you can imagine the opposition. So when you think of Christian, you hear these voter intimidation or voter fraud situations, remember that there are people fighting, but there aren't many of them. They need your prayers. And so, Christian, we appreciate all that you've done to try to clean this up on our behalf and for the sake of the country. Thank you so much. And thanks, and we'll talk to you soon.
Bye-bye.
Bye-bye. All right, Sandy Rios, so much to say, so much more. We'll say it tomorrow, Sandy Rios, in the morning on AFR Talk.
The views and opinions expressed in this broadcast may not necessarily reflect those of the American Family Association or American Family Radio.